I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Live exclusively for WCPT in Chicago, standing up and speaking out, here's Hal Sparks.
Hey, welcome to the show, and Johnny Million is with us, as always.
Hey.
Johnny, good to talk to you. At Johnny Million 1, the number 1,
oh, yeah.
To tweet him, because unlike the President of the United States, Johnny and I have Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
I have to say, before we get into the insanity that was this week, for those of you that didn't, you know, that we didn't walk hand in hand through this muck on my live stream. If you're just joining us for the radio show, and welcome, CPT audience, bless you, congratulations, you made it through some of the worst. There's still some concerning news. We will deal with that. Chris Sampson from Tapestry Media is going to be on with us in a little bit. He works with Malcolm Nance and those guys and assesses threats. And there are a few because basically Parler is becoming like a regrouping digital camp for insurrectionists. But it's adorable. It's an adorable camp. You know what I mean? And it's nice of them, I think, the people who have left Twitter for, you know, in a huff for Parler and Gab, to round themselves up in an FBI honeypot so easily. Because I can't believe that the FBI and others have not had accounts on those sites, knowing full well what they are, because of the meme that Johnny and I were talking about right before the show. Johnny, tell him about the meme that's going around that we were
discussing.
Oh,
the Ron Burgundy?
Yes, which...
it's like, it's the old Will Ferrell Ron Burgundy. Well, that escalated quickly, and it's been modified to, oh, well, that escalated slowly and surely over the last 4 years for anybody paying attention.
Right. Yeah. Like, how do you not see this stuff coming? How? Yeah. What? No, you know, so... We have been through quite the week, but one of the definite silver linings is that in the last 24 hours, not only has the president's personal Twitter feed been taken down and he'd been personally suspended after a 12-hour, they gave him a chance. Yeah. Like, they give everybody a chance. They took him off for 12 hours and said, now you sit in the digital corner with wearing a funny hat. And right? And then he couldn't resist, and the first thing out is his hostage style concession video, which he made under duress, essentially, let's be honest, to avoid the 25th Amendment. That's all that was for. Let's not kid ourselves. Everyone around him was going, they think you're insane. The only thing that's going to convince people that you're sane is if you recognize that you lost this election soundly. Take it on the chin and be an adult, because everyone, including anybody that's going to last in the Republican Party, because we'll talk about Bye Bye Holly over the course of the show as well. Everybody was saying, we believe you're insane. Now, so he does it. He, you know, many people have already seen the video, so I'm not going to play any audio from it. Or it's just not necessary. It's ridiculous. He won't even say the Biden administration. He just says a new administration, which seeded
God.
Yeah. He goes, a new administration will take, which all of his followers in the QAnon world have taken to mean, oh, it's him and Mike Flynn will be VP. You know, that there's going to be a new administration with Trump at the top, but a whole new administration. It's not a new presidency. It's not a new president, vice president. And there's an edit in the video right before the line where he says a new administration, where they clearly had the Biden administration will take da 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 da, and he screamed and stomped and they let him change that one line, and then they went back to taping it. It's a joke, but they kicked him off. He comes back after 12 hours, does his little perfunctory legalese video at the bottom. Thank you, Hal Vickery, for the super chat, and everybody joining us today on the internet as well. Can you feel the freedom and the on the internet today? Now, granted, there's going to be a lot of trolling going around because they're very angry and they're cornered and they'll freak out and yada yada. But we'll deal with that as we do. But after he gets let off Twitter suspension for 12 hours, that ended up being like 14 before he actually did anything. He, of course, immediately goes on and does one of these, you know, fomenting subterfuge coded nearly kofefe messages where if you read it the right way, he didn't really concede. He's talking about, you know, and we're going to fight on. And Twitter said, no, OK, look, we're not stupid. We know, you know, when you're like, you shift into whisper mode instead of screaming, the message is still the same. Goodbye. So he has been permanently banned from Twitter forever. And he's lost his Facebook account until after the inauguration. He Amazing. Immediately attempted to get back on Twitter through Dan Scavino's account. That was shut down. And the POTUS account, he tried to use the official POTUS account, and then they took down what he posted. They left that account is live, but they took that down. And then, of course, the jokes started where everybody was pretending he was taking over their thing. And all the Republicans, like they're in Negan's gang on The Walking Dead, started using his face that he had on his Twitter profile as their Twitter avatar, which wow. in and of itself is amazingly embarrassing. Like that in and of itself. Thank you, Cammy. In and of itself, that is just lame. That's like Matt Getz lame. That's like Marco Rubio's haircut lame. That's like Marsha Blackburn's Tennessee accent lame. That's like Josh Hawley's book titles lame.
What is his book title?
I don't know, because he doesn't have a book deal anymore because he lost it on Thursday.
Yeah, and he's going to try to take that to the Supreme Court, and all he lost was like a distribution deal. He can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, write your own book.
It's a private company.
Self-publish. I don't get it. Can somebody maybe out there in MAGA world, I'm sure you guys are chomping at the bit to claim that somehow that Apple and Google as private companies, by not carrying Parler, which is a private company, and not providing them with free access and free press by being on their sites is somehow the removal of that is the thank you, Billy Hutchings. Much love to you, brother. Thank you. Is somehow a violation of their free speech rights. These are how many times have we heard from Republicans that this, you know, that business should be left alone. Government regulation is not the solution. Trump himself ran on this phony baloney idea that he was getting rid of more regulations than any president in history, which is, again, just like I lowered drug prices for the first time. Look, drug prices went down during the Trump administration because three major drugs went generic in the second year of his presidency. It wasn't because of his actions. He didn't sign anything. It happened.
Time passed.
Right, exactly. Time passed. In the same way that he's like, this is the fastest vaccine ever. Well, A, not really. The H1N1 vaccine happened in 6 months. And since he dragged this whole thing to pretend that it didn't start earlier. So it seems like a shorter time, you know, since March.
Right.
It's, you know, way faster. But in reality, the Chinese government posted the genome of SARS-CoV-2, the disease that causes COVID-19, in January before the lockdown started, before his 3-day delay of stopping flights from China, all that stuff. They already posted it. The entire world got to work on a vaccine in January. It took as long as it took, and it partly took that long, you know, as short a time as it did and this length of time. Because of science, because science has improved since polio and the Spanish flu, for crying out loud. So, time moves forward. You know, he's going to claim that because, Space Force's satellites are more advanced than the ones we put in the air during the Cold War mid-80s, that somehow he's responsible for that technology and not the fact that people just keep working on their stuff over the course of, you know, like, it's just goofy. So anyways, before we even get down that road, I would like to say for the record that Trump has not even started a Parler account because he's too busy harumphing. I would have thought immediately, strategically, and I don't want to give anybody ideas, but I don't doubt it, that he officially would have moved to Parler immediately, done a Trump Tweets Parler account, and that all of his nutcase followers on Twitter, all the Marsha Blackburns of the world and all the Elise Stefanik's and the what's the woman who wants to bring a gun into the Capitol well so that she'll clearly be on the side of the MAGA people who are breaking down the window and she can participate in the zip tie assassination of the vice president, which is what they were planning, on the floor of the Capitol rotunda. That she could be on that side of it. So bring a gun into the well.
That stuff was terrifying.
The what? Yeah. I mean, and the Gab conversations about hunt down Mike Pence. They had a gallows outside, but they were going to execute him. They were going to zip tie his hands and blow his brains out because he was just doing his job.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised. We got to take a break, but I'm shocked the president didn't start immediately a Trump Tweets Parler, and then everybody just carried it, you know, just put them out. But then those people who did that, who weren't commenting on them and going, this is what Trump is posting on Parler, this is why it's nuts, this is why it's wrong, all the people who are like just copy and pasting it on their account would get their Twitter feeds taken down, which would also be a joy. But right now, Trump is holed up, losing his mind, screaming at paintings. I think he's supposed to be at Camp David. So he can, you know, they're moving him out of there so he doesn't break anything in the Oval Office or smear crap on the walls and do his own little MAGA attack. This is going to be, these next 12 days are going to be tense at points. But ultimately, Trump will go out like he has always gone out, with a whimper, settling in quiet, never showing his face again in Atlantic City or in the world of creating online universities or starting Staker water companies or airlines or buying football teams. They all peak in the middle and fade off really quick. Just this like quick abrupt end before the next track starts. And this will not be any different. Trump was not going to change during his presidency. He's not going to become a different human being. And he's going to fail on the same level he's been failing. Somebody in the feed just said, Don Jr. is going to start a newsletter. Yeah, I can't wait for Eric's zine. We'll be back right after this. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police Heads remarks, which he has apologized for and walked back. Too little, too late, I would argue, but we'll see. We'll be back right after this.
Now let's get back with Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
I want to thank everybody for
this. This is a WCPT 820 civil
rights. Oh, well, look out. A civil rights alert. Okay. I wanted to thank everybody in the super chats, especially Billy Hutchings, who sent a super chat saying the house. It was for the Hal Sparks. Now you know the GOP is the party of personal irresponsibility fund. And then Sean and Lisa and everybody who's joined and followed today, thanks. Like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. InfotainmentWars.com, of course, is our YouTube page. You can also follow me on Twitter at Hal Sparks, and you can follow Johnny Million at Johnny Million One, the number one, on Twitter, because, like I said, unlike the president, we have functioning Twitter feeds, and mine's verified. I have two things the president doesn't have right now, besides, I mean, I have a lot more.
And a soul.
Yeah. I have an Audi, and I also have real hair. And, yeah. So there was obviously a lot of blowback, and I do want to address this since we were on the air in Chicago. John Catanzara of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police issued a statement. He's been very pro-Trump anyways, which is a problem because I would argue that police organizations, it is best if you do not endorse national politicians. if there's something about the mayor, because the mayor's more into funding the cops and that kind of stuff, and making sure that injured police get taken care of, and like in New York, where you have a situation where there's a post 9/11 fund and the management of it by the mayor is meaningful, you might have some skin in that game to bring it up, right? But on a national level, you're dividing yourself amongst the populace, and you serve the populace equally. The police, and what is amazing about having a functioning police department in the world that differs us when it's working from a lot of the rest of the world, which makes America exceptional, is the very fact that cops don't care what your political beliefs are. They enforce the law on you and for you equally. And so the belief over time, or the continued ratcheting up of the separation of the, you know, the police by politics, is a dangerous thing for the police, and puts them in the middle of what would effectively be a situation like we had on the Capitol, where a police officer who works at the Capitol was killed. His head was bashed in with a fire extinguisher. He bled into his brain, and his family had to take him off life support. Another police officer had his ribs broken as he was crushed by the crowd. And that's beyond the citizens who died.
Back the blue.
Right. The back the blue folks couldn't wait to barge in and bash in the head of a police officer and murder him on the floor of the Capitol Rotunda. And in the middle of all that happening, instead of waiting for it to resolve, where the information came out fully, even the head of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police said in discussing the pro-Trump mob that stormed the Capitol building, said there was no arson. There was no burning of anything. There was no looting. Okay, first of all, they brought two bombs into the place. One made it inside the building. The other was set near an escape. The idea that they would drive people out where they knew the Congress people would leave the building if they couldn't get through the tunnels, which they were planning on killing. They would leave a bomb near one of the exits and set it off when Congress was leaving the building. So much for no arson. So this would be a good time to remind people in law enforcement, DAs, judges, to keep out of these things the whole "we don't discuss ongoing investigations." Yeah, don't discuss situations where you're not the spokesperson for that law enforcement group that are currently live dealing with a dangerous, violent situation that is – it was in the process of costing lives. So he said there was no arson, there was no burning of anything. Not true. There was an ineffective bomb, or one that they stopped the person, they caught the person or ran the person off, or they were outside range of where they could set off their crappy little pipe bombs. They were active, they were real, they weren't mock-ups, they weren't just terrorism. They were active, functioning explosives brought by Trump supporters into the Capitol at the direction of the president. And then he says there was no looting. Of course there was. Florida man, one of the goofiest ones, walked out with Speaker Pelosi's podium, put it on eBay, had five bidders. His name is Adam, and he's been arrested. He's going to jail. So unless the
FBI, last I saw, the FBI was really into him and his family.
Yeah. Yeah. There and
I don't know if he's been found yet. Has he been arrested?
Oh, he got arrested. Yeah. No, they got him. Yeah. He's been arrested and charged. He had a chance to shave. He started doing the whole change your look thing.
Oh, yeah.
In case there's a lot of that going around. There was very little destruction of property. First of all, the scaffolding for the inauguration is going to have to be checked by bomb-sniffing dogs. They're going to have to rebuild sections of it. Pieces of it were broken off to use as ramrods to break the doors and windows. They broke into offices. They stole a computer. They took pictures they took screen caps and uploaded them to the internet of emails that were private government emails for, you know, anybody to look at, because we all know the internet stops at the shores of the United States. It's not like every other hostile force in the world can't peek at those things and start learning the email addresses and start phishing campaigns and all that stuff. So they have to do a complete wipe. Everybody there has to get a new email address because these idiots were posting things. But no, just very little destruction. No fights. Okay, again, an officer was murdered. Another officer had his ribs crushed. A woman was shot through the neck because as she tried to climb through the window, as they breached a barricaded door, and while they were still clearing Congress people and their staff out of an area so that they wouldn't be zip tied and murdered. There was no obviously violence in this crowd. There obviously was violence in this crowd. That might be the dumbest statement in the whole thing. They pushed past security and made their way to the Senate chamber. Did they destroy anything when they were there? No.
What?
Yes, they did.
That's not poorly worded.
So his apology was, as your president, and he's just talking to the people. He's not talking to everybody else that he was speaking on behalf of the Fraternal Order of Police. As their leader, he says, as your president, I showed a lapse in judgment yesterday during an interview. For that, I am sorry. I brought negative attention to our lodge, the FOP family, and law enforcement in general. I was in no way condoning the violence in D.C. yesterday. No, you were just pretending it didn't exist.
Yeah.
You were forgiving them as dead bodies were being removed from the Capitol. My statements were poorly worded. Yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of violence, but not so much violence. But it's kind of, you know, poorly worded. He was unequivocally defending the people who charged the Capitol and negating their crimes as if they didn't exist. He was claiming they didn't exist. After seeing more video in the full aftermath, my comments would have been different. Yeah, that's why you keep your mouth shut. And here's the thing. Your comments, honest to God, as a leader of the Fraternal Order of Police, are not welcome in a situation where deaths have occurred, violence has occurred, looting has occurred, bombs were left behind, and two police officers, one injured, both that were injured there, one died from his wounds, his head wound, that during the time that that was happening, you as a spokesperson for the, this isn't about free speech. You can say whatever you want. Just don't do it as the head of the Fraternal Order of Police, speaking on behalf of police officers who protect and serve every day, putting their lives on the line for people that they don't care what their race is or their gender is or their political affirmations are. It's horrifying. Step down and speak as a private citizen. Be the nutty QAnon jerk you want to be in your heart, but don't endanger the lives of police officers by now dividing them based on political lines so that people have to wonder when the cop comes to their door, is this one of the MAGA cops or a real cop? Is this the cop that's there to help me or that's there to kill me because they can get away with it because they're there with a couple of others that might be on their side? Because that's what you do when you make a statement like that as the leader of the Fraternal Order of Police. You endanger cops. You endanger citizens who now have to second guess calling the cops because the head of the FOP is siding with a Trump mob that murdered a cop. Shame on you. And it's as somebody who has FBI personnel and U.S. Marshals in my family who have watched their fellow officers die in front of them. My cousin watched a guy he'd worked with for 6 years bleed out because they couldn't get him help in time because the bullet that struck him ricocheted through his insides. And the guy, those kind of statements like the head of the FOP makes, the guy who they were charging in that door over was selling guns because he was planning to be, you know, fight back against a tyrannical government. Do you understand how language like this and ignorant crap like that gives the guy on the other side of that door who shot that cop to death a reason, an argument in court? It's disgusting. Keep your mouth shut. It's an ongoing investigation. And if you can't do that, you don't deserve to be the head of the Fraternal Order of Police. You are endangering the lives of citizens and police officers. Which is, by the way, the entire goal of Trump's back the blue phony nonsense about we've always got. We back the blue. The door kickers, as Don Jr. calls them. No, they don't. They believe they're their own personal police force. Like,
and that viewing party of the insurrection was pure madness.
That was before. That was, and we'll talk about it when we come back. Chris Sampson's going to be with us. We got to take a break. He's going to jump on with us in the middle of this. We'll talk about that later. That video was actually of the rally, not of the insurrection. Because Trump and Don Jr. and Ivanka and all of them watched it from the White House, and he was apparently happy. He was upset that there wasn't more of a crowd, even though he lied about 250,000 people watching him. We'll be back right after this with Chris Sampson.
This is Doris Davenport, host of The Doris Davenport Show, all local, all the time. Now let's get back to Hal Sparks' radio program, Mega Worldwide.
We're still waiting on Chris Sampson to join us. He'll be hopping on any minute now. We always have the little technological advantage of being curiously technologically challenged, as it were. But there is an ongoing aspect of social media that we'll discuss this with Chris. We've gone there that the fundamental. And I would argue phony naivete of the right, considering how much the very same Republicans that brought us Marilyn Manson caused Columbine somehow don't believe that literal like orders for patriots to stand up and seize the halls of power and fight back. And this is this Civil War 2.0. Wearing Civil War shirts. So wearing shirts that have a simple...
It said January 6th, Civil War.
Yeah. And people wearing 6 million weren't enough. The anti-Semitic phrase that says there weren't enough Jews killed in the Holocaust. That somehow, Manson lyrics, that's serious. But these folks, they're just letting off a little steam. They're just... And so to see these people, especially Josh Hawley, which his statement... I mean, there are laughable statements, and then there's like goofy insanity. But the Josh Hawley statement, when he lost his book deal... Oh, hey... Jake Angeli, the guy with the horns and the face paint,
yeah,
he's been arrested. Just got arrested and charged. That's been posted 7 minutes ago.
That interview with him was terrifying.
Oh yeah, and he's been around the whole time. This isn't somebody new posing as he's an Antifa wearing a crazy costume just to make Trump look bad. This guy's been around.
Oh, and he had the spiel memorized.
Oh, yeah. He just rattles it off. This goes even beyond this. I just tweeted this right before the show. But the whining about big tech censorship and the whining about, from Josh Hawley about this could – the wording he used was amazing. This could not be more Orwellian. Okay, kids, little school time right now. Orwellian is a reference to the book 1984. And 1984 is based on the idea that the state, the government, censors everything. And everything has to pass through a ministry of information, and they twist words to make them specifically have meanings. And if you vary outside the meanings of the words, you can end up in jail and all that kind of stuff. The most Orwellian version of that, the closest, by the way, his warning was coming about, you know, Stalin-esque communist tactics. But in England, for example, one of the reasons why they react to censorship and cancel culture more than we do is because in British law, in British common law, they don't have an absolute right to free speech.
Right.
They don't. It's a monarchy. They have mm-hmm. a queen. It's a beehive, you understand? And so they don't, where over here, cancel culture is more of a, you know, what happens to the Bill O'Reillys of the world? They get shunned. They're not getting jailed, and they can still form a business and do whatever they want later on. But in England, that's not the case. You can be denied being allowed on a broadcasting channel permanently forever and as an act of the government. The same thing happens in, you know, Russia with its insular internalized internet, and the same thing in China, where if you want to break out and be on YouTube, you have to use a VPN or something and subvert the state to be seen. Those are different standards. In the United States, we don't have that, and we're not going to have that. We simply don't. And so this is the most Orwellian thing in the world, like the idea that this is totally Orwellian. Totally Orwellian is state-controlled media, no private media, and you have to be a speaker on behalf of the state to get on. Like, just understand that. That's what totally Orwellian would be. What Josh Hawley thinks totally Orwellian is, he had a $1 million book deal, and it was taken away because he participated in a situation that led to the death of people in the Capitol for the first time since the War of 1812. He lost his book deal. He lost Simon and Schuster. No longer wants to carry his book, which, by the way, would be a joke, would be an absurdity, would be a ridiculous and embarrassing book for them to carry. It would go against everything that they stand for as a publisher, including free speech.
Yeah.
Because as a member of the government suing them to the Supreme Court, insisting he has a right as a government official to have a book published by a private publisher, that's one of the most Orwellian things you could ever have. Like this, the amazing just flip-flop of what Republicans used to think they stood for. And I mean, there's definitely room to understand that they were never on the up and up, that this was always a ruse, that when Stalin said, you know, or I think this came after him, the idea was you take over one of the American parties and you gut the system from within. The assumption was because the Democrats wanted things like Social Security, which sounds like socialism, which sounds like communism to certain people, that the Democrats would be the low-hanging fruit target of that group, right? That you would, of course, because you've got sympathizers, right? Unfortunately, they didn't. There weren't sympathizers. There's a difference between social programs, socialism, and communism. Like, it's just... And anybody with half a brain who can pay attention knows the difference. But in the case of the Republican Party, what did they do? They took over the NRA. They were the Russian government was the primary funder of the NRA in 2016. They dumped money into Trump's pockets and backed his election through the NRA. There's no Second Amendment in Russia. You have to have a gun license for 5 years before you can own a handgun. They track how much ammunition you have. If you go out and shoot six shots, you better come back with six shell casings or you're going to jail. But the NRA loves Putin loves Russia. Can't wait to cash those checks. The Republicans were the party of anti-communists, the Reds, the Russians. But the kleptocracy, the gangster government that took over in the 90s, ooh, buddy, that's free market capitalism. That's laissez-faire capitalism with a shotgun, baby. That's shuffling money in the underground everywhere. I mean, that's the Bitcoin future, man. So why wouldn't they back that? This was and the fact that these people don't recognize that you don't bring a gun into the rotunda because someone might take it from you. I even know where the congresswoman who was fighting for the right to open carry in the Capitol. I even know where she keeps it on her body. I know which direction the handle faces. Do you understand? She has a back-facing holster for a right arm draw. I know that because she showed me that. She also showed me and everyone else in the world that if you come up to her and you shake her right hand and act like you're just happy to meet her, you can take her gun with your left hand. She showed everyone that as a concealed carry, open carry person. So she wants to bring a hidden gun into the Capitol, and then she wants to cheer on the fools that wanted to charge in there. And she would be in, if they got in there, what guarantee do I have as somebody who knows she backs Trump in everything that he does, that she believed in Stop the Steal, that the gun she would want to bring into the Capitol would somehow defend the Capitol against anybody trying to break in, and she wouldn't just join ranks with the people who were coming in? That's why you don't have a gun. That's why. That is precisely why you allow the people who are protecting you to have guns, because they are there to protect everyone equally. I am continually stunned at the ignorance and naivete of these people, or the faux naivete.
Yeah.
Because honestly, they're just on their side. And I think when we come back, we need to talk about Ginni Thomas. We need to talk about the wife of a Supreme Court justice who not only has been supporting Trump openly and is a believer in QAnon, is that mentally off her rocker, but paid for busloads of armed maggots to show up at the Capitol. Paid for them. That in and of itself, we got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. It's the House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
This is Damian Perdue of Think Theory Radio. Saturdays at 6 p.m., you're listening to House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
Okay, so we'll have Chris on, I think, in the next hour, because he's apparently fielding tons of calls about the kind of violence we've been talking about right now, and that's his day job. So I completely understand that. I know that Malcolm Nance has been on, was on AM Joy, or the replacement show for AM Joy, now that Joy has her regular show, but he was on this morning. There's this article that comes out that Ginni Thomas, who is Clarence Thomas's wife, has always been a Trump supporter. You know, has been kind of one of these hyper right wing people. On Wednesday morning, Ginni Thomas, wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, endorsed the rally in Washington demanding that Congress overturn the election. She then sent her love to the demonstrators who violently overtook the Capitol several hours later. 2 days later, Thomas amended her post with the addendum, note, written before violence in U.S. Capitol. Somebody else did that for her, by the way. That's staff. By that point, five people involved in the insurrection, including a Capitol police officer, had died. On the morning of January 6th, Ginni Thomas, she has not posted since. Her Facebook page is now gone. She took it down because of all the conspiracy theories and QAnon stuff that she's been posting about for a good long while. T- Thomas, a conservative lobbyist and zealous supporter of Donald Trump, has fervently defended the president over the last 4 years. On her Facebook page, she frequently promotes baseless conspiracy theories about a coup against Trump by Jewish philanthropist George Soros, a frequent target of anti-Semitic hate. Thomas draws many of these theories from fringe corners of the internet, including an anti-vax Facebook group that claimed Bill Gates was using the COVID vaccine to kill people. In recent months, she also amplified unsubstantiated corruption claims against Joe Biden while insisting falsely that the Obama administration illegally spied on Trump's 2016 campaign, then tried to rig the election against him. In turn, Trump has rewarded Thomas with an extraordinary amount of access to the Oval Office. Her advocacy group, Groundswell, got an audience with the president in early 2019. By the way, Groundswell is the people who brought busloads of Trump supporters to the Capitol. According to the New York Times, the meeting was arranged after Clarence and Ginny Thomas had dinner with the Trumps. Clarence Thomas and Trump appear to be quite friendly. The justice took his clerks to meet with the president in the Oval Office at least once. Ginny attended as well. At the White House, Groundswell members lobbied Trump against transgender service in the military, which he'd already prohibited in 2017. The ban, this was the big thing that they were very concerned about. After the Supreme Court lifted lower court orders blocking the 5-4 vote, Clarence Thomas did not recuse himself from the case. He's never recused himself from any case because of his wife's lobbying activities, which is nuts and a concern in and of itself. New York Times also reported that Ginny Thomas compiled lists of federal employees whom she deemed insufficiently loyal to the president. I went back and I was like looking at stuff about Ginny Thomas. This was February of last year. Among those pressing Trump to weed out disloyalty, Clarence Thomas's wife. A group led by Ginny Thomas has targeted officials in the administration and lobbied for its own preferred choices. As the president's distrust in those serving him has grown, so has its sway. So they created a list of people that need to be removed in no uncertain terms, which in retrospect is really scary language. For the past 18 months, Ginny Thomas, the wife, they were like draining the swamp. This was what they meant. The wife of Justice Clarence Thomas and other conservatives have plied the White House with memos and suggestions about which people to fire and who should replace them. President Trump has generally treated Ms. Thomas's suggestions coolly, passing them off to advisors because he doesn't do any of his own work. According to people familiar with Ms. Thomas' efforts. But since the end of the Senate impeachment trial, the president has become more distrustful of people filling the ranks of government and has been giving those recommendations a closer look. The memos from Ms. Thomas were first reported by Axios. Among Ms. Thomas' top targets have been at the National Security Council, the former head of the White House Personnel Office, Steve Ducey, gone, right? And other top White House aides. Other target was Jesse K. Liu, who recently left her job as U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia for a job in the Treasury Department, was later withdrawn by the White House. Ms. Thomas, a politically active conservative who for nearly 7 years has led a group called Groundswell, also successfully lobbied for a role for Ken Cuccinelli, the former Attorney General of Virginia, who is now acting Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security. Another conservative, Becky Norton Dunlop, an official at the Heritage Foundation, has repeatedly passed names of possible appointments to the personnel officials. Now, understand, all of Trump's judges came from a list from the Heritage Foundation.
Yep.
He didn't do any of that work. He didn't do any homework. He didn't know any of them. He didn't go, oh, yeah, they were in First Circuit, Third Circuit, Ninth Circuit. They worked their way up, and we've known them for years because of good jurisprudence. Or we've had them come and speak before Congress, so we know that, you know, they take these things seriously. They begrudgingly ruled against things they politically disagree with, or they politically agree with because those lawsuits had bad standing or were not well crafted or didn't have decent legal reasoning. So you know him to be a good judge, because I don't need somebody to believe everything I believe legally. As a matter of fact, I think it shows more character when somebody can recognize something that goes against their political or philosophical beliefs but is right on the merits.
You're talking about Obama's cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah. Genuinely. And a lot of those folks, you know, that's why people bring in people they disagree with, because even though they know this person will disagree with them on certain issues on a philosophical level, they also know they will agree with the decision of their superior when it comes time. And they know that the value of their agreement is the, here's that word, diversity of their opinion. But the president has been all about bringing in these just nothing but sycophants this entire time. So in the course of the, you know, the president wanting, you know, these, you know, nothing but purest allies, of course that leads to the kind of stuff we saw this week. Now, in the case of, you know, Trump and his, you know, fans and everybody having some sort of, hold on one second, let me get this shot back here. Donnie, I move your head around in the screen so people can see you because, it's there you are.
Did I move?
No, you didn't. I have two different shots, one that involves.
Because I get wiggly over here.
It's true. Fidgety. I do want to remind everyone that there has been, and for quite some time, as we've all watched sort of the devolution of Facebook over time. And Twitter in a lot of ways, because of Trump and his acolytes turning it into a nonstop political arm, you know, because the president was, you know, without Twitter and without Section 230 protecting Twitter, there is no President Trump. The irony that he wanted Section 230 rolled back when he would have long been made Twitter or Facebook or any of the other sites liable for the things that he said, mm-hmm. which led to deaths, which would have made them legally have to kick him off, just like you would throw out somebody yelling fire in a crowded theater.
The idea of him not knowing these things, of him, his ignorance is a virtue, and that is so sad and infuriating.
Well, and the icing on the cake is that it's the hashtag Diaper Don that drove him to it. That somehow he thinks by invoking, you know, the removal of 230 and making them responsible, he puts in this kind of, I don't know, Reagan-esque redo of the fairness doctrine, inverting that, but only applying it to social media so that he can sue them for libel because, I don't know, maybe allegedly, somebody like me, you know, posted hashtag Diaper Don a bunch of times because of, and so he could sue.
Because you know he hates it.
And so he could sue Noel Castler for Noel Castler saying his truth online, even though he had signed an NDA under the, while he worked at The Apprentice. And that's what that came from. I mean, ultimately, the Diaper Don hashtag is related to the fact that Trump has tried to enforce lots of non-disclosure agreements. I mean, there is reason. I don't know what the legal wrangling of it would be, but there is reason enough to believe that that no one running for president can have any active NDAs. You know what I mean? Like, it seems antithetical to government that in your
business... Well, yeah, and antithetical to transparency.
That's right. That in your business dealings, if you have a bunch of, you know, non-disclosure agreements, that goes towards... I think it's probably in the same grounds as the anonymous holds problem I have with the Senate. You know, being able to block something and not say you're the one blocking it. Not having to say, I blocked this bill. I block this from coming to the floor, right? That in and of itself. In and of itself, there is a value to, you know, us knowing as much about our, you know, our folks in government as we possibly can. Hence, at least 10 years of taxes need to be shown to relevant parties or posted, you know, as a law. I mean, because you don't have to pass, you know, all the public servants, all the people who work in the White House have to pass a security check, except the president. The president and the vice president don't technically have to pass those things. They don't, which is super weird. And the idea is, well, the American people must trust him. But that's under the impression that the American people have all the information that you would need to trust somebody. We obviously don't. You don't have that much information about any human being. Because you can know somebody's taxes and all those other things and still have them disappoint you in their moral or you know, governmental behaviors to a point where you wouldn't vote for them again.
Yep.
But the underlying aspect of, you know, we don't know who's paying this person is extraordinary and brand new on a level, especially as we get into the Bitcoin era, as, you know, as crypto, you know, I mean, the Trumps are planning on starting a network where they have their own cryptocurrency that is farmed by their followers' eyeballs. By watching their show, you mine their crypto, Trump coin. So the longer you sit there, the more your little account goes up. It won't ever be worth anything. They're not going to tell you that. And it won't trade for anything else. And it's really just a coupon code for their whatever sponsors they end up getting. But that's the plan.
Yeah.
So, you know, this part, I mean, this is a very dangerous situation. We got to take a break. When we come back, I think Chris will be able to join us. We're going to switch over to meeting style, Johnny. You and I will fix that during the break. We'll be back right after this. This is the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It's a real radio show. Yeah, it's not a podcast. But it gets turned into one on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hal Sparks Radio Podcast, Mega Worldwide. You can listen to that later on. By the way, thanks, Chris LeBoy, working through COVID. And we'll see you guys right after the break.
You're listening to the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
I've had people walk out of me before, but not when I was being so charming.
Video streaming at HalSparks.com.
Well, I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
Damn, us faithful pimp stick.
True progressive talk.
Might be a good time for you guys to give up.
I'm so proud of the weird collection of audio drops that are in that. You know, I put that one together myself.
That's a good one.
Long time ago. Hi, everybody. Yes, Billy. Good to see you. Hello. And hello to everybody in the chat who are joining us today. Chris Sampson's going to be joining us soon. He is literally, there is so much live in the Twitter sphere, in the Parler sphere, in the world around this that is beyond sketchy right now because they are, of course, calling for acts of violence and the ratcheting up and making them feel like they've been censored is partly what's driving their, you know, their anger, you know, about this. They think this is proof that, you know, that they're being discriminated against because they don't have a free platform paid for with ads for stuff they would never buy, that where they get to pour their thoughts into the heads of others randomly. Like, and it's so funny that they turn out like the most antisocial people in the world are angry about being kicked off of social media. This is sort of more of the stunning part of it for me. So I, you know, and as things start to, you know, to play out and we have to, you know, deal with it, I think, does anybody know who's still left in the Trump world that has a Twitter account? Ivanka does. Oh. Melania's own and her FLOTUS account are still up, of course. I think Don Jr.'s is still there. Yeah. Oh, Ike's on the line. Oh, all right. Let's grab a caller while we're waiting for to see if Chris can join us today. I think Ike might be on the line. Let's grab him if he is. Is Ike one of our callers waiting?
You know, I haven't screened, but I'm guessing the 305 would be Ike.
That might be him. Let's give it a
well done.
Yeah, down with the 305. Is that Ike?
This is David from North Miami Beach. Greetings, time changer.
Well, that's all right. Hey, David from North Miami Beach. How are you?
I'm good. I just set off my recorder. Hang on. Okay, sorry. Hi. Yeah. So my question is, which would be easier, creating a montage of various Republican presidents betraying their own allies, or just then find a way to mass mail everyone a copy of the movie Contagion, which basically predicted all this 10 years ago?
Right.
Because, you know, back to Reagan betraying the air traffic controllers who backed him in the election, Bush Sr. betraying the Shiites in Iraq, he told to rise up against Saddam, and of course he did nothing. Don't get me started on W. Not that Clinton and Obama were perfect, but you know, there's got to be a way to show these people what to expect next time around, because it happens every time.
Well, there is, and again, this is, there is a direct through line from, you know, Nixon getting pardoned on his way out the door for crimes where he had broken, you know, had hired people to break into the Democratic National Committee, to Reagan getting elected because he was behind the scenes trading arms trading with the Iranians using coke money all through there, to George H.W. Bush, at the direction of Bill Barr, pardoning Caspar Weinberger and other members of the group that were involved in Iran-Contra, simply to hide his own journals becoming evidence so that he wouldn't face criminal charges for what he'd done, to his son getting elected because he's just the dude you'd rather have a beer with, while his brother ran Florida that Al Gore actually won numerically, which we found out a year and a half later. To George Bush, you know, ignoring the PDB, blowing off all of the warnings about Osama bin Laden. Now, I don't really think about him that much. To, you know, endlessly.
This is all true, but you're talking about upper level mischief. I'm talking about poor guys, boots on the ground, betrayed. I mean, let's.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Papa Bush helped create, in one fell swoop, Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, and Osama bin Laden. Nice going.
Mm-hmm. Also, whereas, by the way, one of the concerns that we have, and you know, Malcolm Nance had brought this up and others, that basically we're in a situation where, can you imagine if Timothy McVeigh had had access to WhatsApp?
Yeah.
We are in a situation.
He did at the time. It was the post-Cold War you know,
bulletin boards.
Well, not just BBS, but I'm talking about the talk radio. Because remember, now everyone is spending, or pre-COVID, they're spending 2 to 4 hours a day in their car. You can't watch TV. Maybe right. your smartphone can help. What does that leave? Talk radio. And rare, you know, sure, a few areas that
there's
a, you.
I agree. I agree as far as messaging goes. Different. And you've I'm sure you saw Rush Limbaugh's conversation where he was saying, you know, that pain. Well, he was saying people are asking for, you know, to stop the violence. And he goes, I'm glad people like Adams and Thomas Paine didn't feel that way. Basically saying, no, this is it should continue. That in of itself, that's
away from it all.
That's right. Well, and he's going to be dead soon. So he wants to go out as this kind of icon of extremism, you know, because he can't.
Let me pick up his book where he's a he imagined himself as a latter day Paul Revere. If he could actually work with copper or silver, I'd be impressed. But otherwise, no dice.
Yeah. Well, and the issue I have is not so much the overt messaging like you would see on social media. Or somebody listening to Rush Limbaugh and getting ratcheted up. I'm talking about the coordination between Nichols and McVeigh using crypto apps like WhatsApp that allow them to hide their communications from law enforcement and destroy communications before. They didn't have access to that stuff, and still they managed to murder hundreds. So
true, but as someone who's a fan of Gary Hart for his pushing low-tech defense methods instead of high-tech that often cost too much and do too little, I remind you of how much damage could be done by people copying cassettes, usually of right-wing Christian messages, you know, crude but effective, and you know, unless you were mailing it, it was often with little trace. So, it's scary.
I completely agree on messaging. I'm not talking about messaging. I'm talking about actual material coordination. Mm-hmm. Other ways besides phone calls that can be traced, that you literally can act out this thing. And that's where we get to the fact that somebody was coordinating from inside the house, that Mo Brooks and others inside the Congress were in contact with members of the Stop the Steal movement who were storming the Capitol at the time. Active members were in conversation via text message and WhatsApp. And specifically, like the text message thing, that's overt. So I can argue that they're aware that text messages can be seized. So anybody who's talking to them is just has no idea the volume of damage that they're doing, or is just psychotic. But the people who were talking to those folks on WhatsApp or on Gab or DMing them on Twitter or Parler, yeah, those folks were trying to speak to them under the radar, and therefore are responsible for the death of that police officer and the potential leaving behind of bombs on the premises. They were coordinating with those people. If you'll notice, and guys, the Josh Hawley picture where he's given that, you know, everybody's like he's throwing the fist up to support the people. He's not throwing a fist up. When you're walking left to right and you throw your fist up, you show the back of your hand. That you're like, yeah. When you hold your fist out the way he was, that's a military hold signal. That's like, wait till I'm clear, guys. Wait till I get out of the way. And he was no longer in the building when they stormed in. He wasn't there when those bombs were placed.
No.
It's sketchy as hell. You know, I'm willing to be wrong and totally conspiratorial about it. But as things start to roll out about this guy, each of it becomes increasingly gross. Each of it becomes increasingly suspect. And this guy was planning on, I mean, it was so funny because and we got to take a break soon. But my girl's a big fan of the show Designated Survivor. And in the show Designated Survivor, Kiefer Sutherland is the agricultural secretary. And he's the designated survivor for, you know, this thing. And it's no big deal.
But yeah, he's a dumb. Right, he gets the short straw, and he's basically just eagle-eyed, but...
Yeah, and he's taken off campus. Well, they built this other safety room below, and this one guy who turns out to be in on the bombing manages to magically find his way to this safety room. And my girlfriend Summer was like, is it just me, or does Josh Hawley look exactly like that guy in the same way that we live in a simulation where the guy who was just arrested looks like a Simpsons character? Totally. And all of these folks need a good looking at. Sorry. If you were messaging with people who were storming through the Capitol with armed members of their party, who were participants in a situation where people died, and you're a congressperson, you need a full-throated ethics investigation and legal problems from here out. And anybody who was part of it needs to not be seated. There were a bunch of state senators. They need to not be sent. Yeah, I appreciate the call. We'll be back right after this. It's the House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
This is Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT.
That's right. We also have a Discord available, and if you're in the chat room, Can't Stop Lying, I'll post that link for us. That's fun. And thank you, Johnny Million, for the Patreon hype. I adore you. Because we finally broke the 500. Thing on our Patreon, which is a beautiful thing, and I'm overwhelmed, and I can't tell you, I was not expecting it. I certainly was not expecting it before January 1st. It happened like in the lead up, and then I definitely wasn't expecting it before us to clear that before we got to, say, the inauguration, for example. But I appreciate the support. You know, I've been streaming practically every day, one day off and only sometimes, since the beginning of the first lockdown, since last
April. I had to mute my notifications of how Sparks is streaming live now. Yeah. I assume that if I'm awake, or typically when I'm not awake,
yeah,
Hal is currently streaming.
Yeah. And a couple of times this week, I was expecting, because of Trump's rally and because of his gathering his crowd and the counting of the votes and his disappointment when the vote count came through, where he was going to be disappointed that day. And I told you guys, I told you, even with all the awful that happened, I said last week and during my stream all throughout, and just like I said, the ticket was going to be Biden-Harris. I said that in 2018. Are you playing music on you? Do I hear music?
I don't think so.
Oh, Chris Sampson's joining us. That's why.
Yay.
There he is.
Is my camera coming through?
Not yet, but we'll definitely get you in there.
I see a CS.
I see it. Yeah, we see a CS. So hey, whenever John, you turn that on, you can join us there. That'd be awesome.
It's not giving me the option. Hold on. I'll figure it out. Take care.
No problem. We're currently just chatting online, and we can hear you. Or we're live on the radio. That's Chris Sampson, by the way.
Hey man. By the way, all the audio, I can't do anything about. It's a hotel audio above me.
It sounds fine, and I'm getting used to it at this point because a lot of people are doing a lot of moving around these days,
and so you
sound great. So before we get you up on camera, since this is a real radio show and we can hear you, welcome to the show, Chris Sampson, my brother from another mother. You've got all sorts of madness going on in D.C. right now. And then a lot of these people have broken out and gotten to, you know, have gone home and had a door knock from federal employees. Some state officials, nightstick, hat, you know, that kind of thing. Are we going to see a big slow roundup? Is that part of the plan, you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, it's, you know, what's happening right now in D.C. is uncharted, you know. I'm trying to get my video here with you.
Yeah, totally
got
fine.
Some of the audio with you, but let's see here.
No worries. So, but are you, you know, there's got to be a lot of chatter right now as Trump got kicked off of Twitter and then got bounced off of Facebook. Where have they retreated to besides Parler?
Well, they're kind of in a combination of platforms. The Telegram platform is still stable for them. They have
what's
Proud Boys have their own feeds. They actually have four or five that we monitor. Roger Stone and Nick Fuentes and Trump himself. They all have Telegram channels, so they're chatting over there, or they're on Parler. Now, Parler was acting really quirky last night, but I think they were just in an overload fashion.
Yeah, I think a lot of people joined really quick.
And definitely blowing up over there.
Right. So, by the way, I'm going to put this up on screen until we do have you a little bit. Let's see. I'll put it in another place that way. So, the Terror Asymmetrics Project, which is what Chris is part of, which is the tacticsofterror.org. This qualifies as both domestic terror by all measures. The threat of going down there, we're going to stop the steal. We're going to march down there together and stop you from counting these votes. That in and of itself, an overwhelming crowd marching on you is meant to make people very nervous in the beginning. So where it's not full on terror until they breach the grounds, once they breach the grounds, you go, oh, this is a terrorist movement, not just a political, like they're just, you know, showing off.
Right. And let's flash back to one of our most covered discussions in the last 10 years, the Benghazi mob attack.
Right.
2012. For your viewers and listeners, I've been working with Malcolm Nance for a decade. And I was actually on that assignment that night.
Right.
When we were monitoring what was happening in Egypt and the walls were overrun.
Yeah.
Flags were pulled down. Fires were lit. And then, of course, many people, after many hours of investigative hearings, we know that the situation in Benghazi unfolded that night. Now, at the time, my job was to monitor forums. And I was in multiple forums, not only in the Arabic forums related to Libya, Ansar al-Sharia, etc., but also the American forums when it came to Terry Jones, the Quran-burning pastor.
Right.
And it was a full-blown battle. Now, that was really what we call a low-grade demonstration mob overrun, or as Malcolm sometimes calls it, a demonstration attack. We took up how many hours and $7 million worth of investigation time over a small annex in another country for four dead Americans. Justified to at least ask all those questions. You had, you know, General Gibson of AFRICOM, you know, his integrity was questioned and shot down by the right wing. You had Hillary Clinton dragged over the coals. You had Mitt Romney attack Barack Obama in the middle of a debate.
Right.
Or as I said at the time, he literally stepped on a dead ambassador to stab the president. And then now we have the situation. My question is, what's the difference? Is it different because it's white guys? Is it different because it's on American soil? And the answer is no, it's not different. There are a lot of these people who arrived to simply do a citizen's expression of outrage. Fine. And by the way, I'm actually a strong advocate of speaking your piece.
Yeah.
But we know for a fact, because it's my job to monitor this.
Yeah.
And I'm not alone. We have been at this. I was on the air September 8th. 2020 with Frank Figliuzzi on Katie Tour's show, where we were literally being asked, what about the threats?
Right.
And the truth is, the reason why I got in the conversation is that they found out I'd been monitoring it for months before that.
Yeah.
With people clearly saying, if we lose, we're going to war.
Yeah.
Now we're here. They lost. They don't like it. They lost by a significant amount, and they're being gaslit by their leader. Fine. Not my problem. Al-Baghdadi gaslit his leaders until he was offed.
Right.
So we know leaders can gaslight their followers.
Yeah.
Now, part of me knows that this is a little bit more complicated in the sense that true believers really believe what they're being told. And it's not my job to basically take someone like, you know, Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was shot, and unplug her brain from QAnon garbage. It's her job to do that, or the people around her.
Right.
And when she tried to crawl through that window and was shot by the appropriate authorities, who would have done that if that had been a Muslim man in garb? That was her choice. And now that I've seen her social media, her video posts, she was hyped up on the situation. So let's move to the guy who was announced this morning that he was arrested, Adam Johnson. Adam Johnson, as many people saw, and I just tweeted about this a while ago, Adam Johnson seen walking out with a lectern. Well, now he goes to jail. All right. He got hyped up on the high. He thought it was fun. Ha ha. We're having giggles. Okay. Now he can go sit in front of a prosecutor and explain himself. So the radicalization process is not all that different. It's just not in Arabic.
It's also, are there levels of extreme in it as well? Because I think one of the problems that these folks do is that there's not an ISIS member who thinks this will just show them. You know what I mean? Whereas there is a big bunch of these people, I call them the cantaloupe and the fruit salad. They're not really there. They're just filler. You know what I mean? It's to make you think it's a more substantial thing than it is. And the problem is a bunch of these people think, well, we're just there. This is just freedom. We're just exercising our right as people crush and storm their way into the building that we're not the people. I didn't break the window. I didn't kill the cop. I didn't shove her through the window. But I was part of the crowd that made it impossible for the cops to stop those people because they weren't few in number. There were, you know, they filled out those numbers, and those people are, there was a woman who like was holding up a peace sign in front of a broken window and in front of Nancy Pelosi's office after it had been ransacked and all this stuff. And they look at it as that, I think, is a distinct difference. And what makes it hard to maybe prosecute some of these folks in the same way you would an obvious terrorist act. You know what I mean? There weren't any posers. There were a lot of posers in this crowd. But they were engaged in criminal activities that resulted in people dying.
That's right. So just like Kyle Rittenhouse. Look at Kyle Rittenhouse. Do you think Kyle Rittenhouse woke up one morning and told himself, I'm going on jihad against BLM? And no, he didn't. He got caught up. There are a lot of young men who went to Syria from whatever country they were in, Tunisia, you know, Egypt, America. And when they arrived, they got caught up. In fact, one of the things I find interesting, and I want to tie in ISIS relevance into this because that's where a lot of what I see here kind of resembles the same behavior. They get caught up in, I'm going to go defend the, and they insert the group that they identify with. In that case, it was the Muslim Ummah, you know, the large Muslim community, right? And now this is, we're going to defend the vote. We're going to defend America. We're going to defend MAGA. We're going to defend our president. It's the same general motif. So the low-level foot soldiers, you know, we have this one story, you know, I wrote about it in Hacking ISIS, the book I did with Malcolm, and it's about the work I do online where we see these kids get online and they think they're going to have a bride when they get there. And one guy from India, I'll never forget this story, gets all the way out there because he wasn't Arabic enough. His job was to dig latrines. And he got a little ticked once he got all the way over there and he wanted his little straight to heaven moment and it wasn't coming. He's digging latrines for the more superior fighters and he got ticked. So bad, he went back home and turned himself into the Indian authorities and said, okay, sorry. And guess what he did? Did he go free? No, he went to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't need to walk from that kind of stuff. Chris, we got to take a break at this point. Can you hang on through the break and we'll talk on the other side of it?
You got it, man.
Thank you, man. This is the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT. Can't Stop Lying just put that book up that Chris was talking about in our chat feed so everybody can take a look at it. It's available on Amazon, the book that Chris did with Malcolm Nance. We'll be back right after this with more of Chris Sampson from Tapestry Media and the Terror Asymmetrics Project, which is what we're facing right now. We'll be back.
Yeah.
I'm Dick Kay from Back on the Beat, and here is the Mega Worldwide Radio Program with Hal Sparks.
Chris Sampson jumped off so we can see if we can get him on the stream on camera as well. He's switching devices. He's out live in the world. He'll be back with us in just 1 second. He's with the Terror Asymmetrics Project, Tapestry, on strategy, tactics, and radical ideologies. He did a book with Malcolm Nance called Hacking ISIS. And they you have to understand well, I guess this situation is twofold, and I'll ask this when Chris pops back on too, and see if I'm right on this. But there are two elements. One is it's kind of scary how many offline and online available communication tools there are now compared to what there were, you know, during World War II, or whenever, you know, at any other time when there was subterfuge going on, and or during the Cold War. When, you know, we had Russian sleeper cells in the United States trying to overthrow the government. That all that stuff happened. All that stuff was real. A lot of the CIA's crazy stuff that they did was in direct response to the fact that crazy stuff was happening that matched that level of concern, paranoia, and worry. There he is.
Hey. Hey,
now we got you. Look at that.
Went to the other eye device. To the iPad. We go to the iPhone.
Indeed.
Works perfectly.
Yeah,
look at this nice 2020 iPad. Can't even do a camera.
It's amazing. It might be, you know, the software that we're using and the trust factor that they have.
Okay.
Yeah, but
that's okay.
Great to have you with us. Good to see your face, brother.
Big honor. A I'm a big fan of you, man.
Yeah,
I think
you're too.
Incredible.
Oh man. Well, you and I go back.
And
a
John,
bit.
John, I'm a bigger fan of you. So
yeah,
sorry.
Oh,
I knew that, but so you really didn't have to say.
We're gonna send you a free copy of John's album, his solo metal album.
Excellent.
On behalf of the show. If you have a printed version, I'll make an LP of it myself. I'll hand scratch it. So, Chris, on this, and I have the website up on the other side of the screen so people can see what we're talking about for you. But I was, on the one hand, it's very scary that these guys can roll back into the 4chans of the world and the other stuff like that. On the other hand, there is no way the FBI and other groups are not just weaseled in there at every corner taking notes, right? At this point, how do you not?
Well, actually, that's the thing I've learned along the way. So a little background. I don't come from those agencies or the military. Actually, by the way, I almost joined the Navy twice. I have a Navy uncle who kept me out.
Right.
He read me the Riot Act. He goes, this is what you're getting. This is what's going to happen. Don't go.
All right.
So, So I came in this as someone who did radio and did different type of investigative work.
Sure.
That just slowly, step by step, got me closer and closer to this in the 2000s. Torture, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I was investigating terrorism cases related to torture, and little by little, I just got more into this.
Yeah.
But what I did years ago that actually ties into this was way back in the day before big internet, little internet had Klan sites and extremist sites.
Right.
And people that I was around, activists, were always trying to keep an eye on groups in Texas that I, which is where I'm from, on the radar, and they wanted to see what they were up to, and they would go out and they would see these 23 people Klan rallies, you know,
yeah.
23, right, 24,
wah,
12,
wah. Right.
Back in the days when they hid their faces, back in the days when, you know, they were low key, then they got emboldened 4 years ago with a mascot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything's changed. So let me just bring that forward again in that what surprised me as I've been doing this more in the last, so we're in 2021 now. So I started getting at this level 2011 maybe, mm-hmm. and then overdrive in the ISIS era, and even more in this field just before Charlottesville.
Right.
And what still stuns me, but I understand, is that the Fourth Amendment actually means something to the FBI mm-hmm. and the judges they go to
right.
get subpoenas to get into those forums.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot get on those forums unless a firm like ours says, heads up, we see the following, here's the evidence, and we hand it over to our contacts.
Mm-hmm.
That starts a process that can result in, for instance, the two guys you may have remembered who were supposedly going to work with Hamas. They had been sharing 3D ammo and weapons making stuff online,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they got on our radar, was because we actually monitor those things.
Yeah,
and when we feed that along, the rest is up to the feds. They do their job, and they're really, really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But that firewall between being able to get in a forum and the observation you're talking about
yeah.
for Americans is very, very strong.
Yeah.
And that's good. For instance, you had Frank Figluzzi on a week ago.
Yes.
Frank is a champion of that. I'm impressed with him all the time because
yeah.
he has a sense of what the law is, but he also has a strong sense of both your right to speak and
yeah.
express and your other freedoms. And it means something to him. You can tell.
Yeah.
So,
as
so
it should.
There are times where, yeah. It's like we can't – and there's a different problem with this is that you can't act on every bad thing the citizens see.
Yeah.
So I get this on Twitter all day long. We see such and such and such a thing. And I look at it and I go, man, I'm in a hotel here.
That's right. We're live on radio, so we have to –
thank you. No, I'm yep. a radio guy. You're
yep,
right. Hey, let me tell you a funny story.
We're back in 4, 3, 2, 1. There we go. Now we're back.
Yeah. I got waterboarded and did not say all those words. So let's keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's right.
Even under the board, I didn't throw any of those words out. But basically, there's a whole line at which you can get the feds to act on something.
Mm-hmm.
And then a line where you just can't really act upon it. You would have to be rounding up so many people. And it would be all thrown out of court.
Right.
Because
so
all he's saying is these and this and this.
Right.
So there's one last layer that I want to bring back to Trump. So this concept that you see me and other people posting about called stochastic terrorism.
Yeah.
Is like, well, maybe if someone roughed up these journalists, that would be okay.
Yeah.
Or, hey, officers, you're arresting a guy. It's okay maybe if you rough him up a little bit. Is he saying, go rough him up? Well, you and I would agree he was, but it's nuanced little language to get what he wants. And that's where I read the transcript on Wednesday. And I saw it loaded with, we're going to go down to the Capitol.
Yep.
We're going to tell them this. And in that crowd, and this is to something you said a while ago, you had guys like this little con artist, Ali Alexander.
Right.
And you had Roger Stone. And you had these guys who have been for months working with Mo Davis. I mean, not Mo Davis.
Mo Brooks.
That's a friend of mine. Mo Brooks.
Yeah.
And what's the other guy's name that was in that? I know his name, but he had these guys, these three. Gosar, Paul Gosar.
Yeah, Paul Gosar and Andy Biggs.
Yeah. Andy Biggs. And he literally is out there going, I'm working with.
Whoops, we froze for a second.
Oh,
that's
hotel internet.
Come on, hotel internet. Three, two, there he is.
Oh,
there you go. We lost you for 1 second. Okay. You froze. But now he was up on that stand saying, I've been working with Mo Brooks, Ali Alexander, who led the stop. For those of you who don't know, Ali Alexander has been one of the people, the organizers behind the Stop the Steal movement.
Right.
And I would argue that saying we're going to march down there and stop the steal is in and of its own way a form of stochastic terrorism, because how are you about to do that?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing that he got on my radar 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was down in Broward County and I was there to watch the next Brooks Brothers riot. Because as you remember, there was a showdown over the vote with DeSantis and Gillum and Scott getting into the Senate. And I didn't know who some of these people were. I knew who Laura Loomer was.
Mm-hmm.
I knew who the Proud Boys were. In fact, I had one Proud Boy get in his face, and I think I stunned him when I told him his name.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he goes,
I know you.
Are you Antifa? He's like, are you Antifa? I go, no, but you're Keith Burwell, and that's Jonathan Pearson. And I started naming off his friends, and he just kind of stopped. And, so I looked over on that first Saturday, and I see Laura Loomer. What's the other guy's name that's a minion of Stone? His name is Jacob – it's the other guy. Jacob Engel? No, Jacob Engel.
Okay.
And and these guys were out there. Michael the Black Man, a.k.a. Michael Simonetti, was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this other guy that kind of just looked interesting. I hadn't seen him before, and it was Ali Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was about 4 feet maximum away between him and Laura Loomer, talking about going down to the airport to pull off a little hoax and scam to make the libs look bad, where they were going to like bring out some boxes and suggest that they were being infused votes. And then all of a sudden, a Ryder truck pulls up, and it's Matt Gaetz and his Miami contact, Juan Fowil, a little scrum of a guy. And they unload this pallet of blank printer paper and said, this could have been ballots injected in the system.
Right.
So they've been playing this game for a while, but I literally watched them plot to go over and do this little camera thing for their audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see the video and I'm like, they really did this.
Yeah.
And their audience bought it.
Right.
Even though I literally sit there 4 feet away from them plotting this stupid stunt. Well,
the amazing thing with me was
– and that's what this is.
We've dealt with – I've talked about this a bunch, how every time they bring up Dominion machines, it's a way of not bringing up the ES&S machines. And that all the stuff that went down in Kentucky, Ohio, Florida, and Texas, where Trump insisted on putting money because he was going to lose Texas. And he didn't want to lose Texas because that's too embarrassing.
Right.
He'd rather lose Georgia was what effectively what they were doing. And that in dealing with this ES&S thing is that the reason we know that dead people voted is because – dead people voted for Trump. They were caught.
Right.
These people are going to jail, which is how the system is supposed to work. But literally, they're using their own actions trying to commit voter fraud that failed as evidence that voter fraud exists, and therefore also the Dems must have done a lot of it. If we did little and we got caught, it's not because we're the only ones doing it. It's because they have something against us. They're doing it on the other side, which is the ridiculous part. When Rudy Giuliani talks about, how much money and the algorithm and all this story, I'm like, he's repeating the sales pitch from whoever told him that if you give us $2 million, we can fix the vote for you. It sounds like he's reading off the brochure he got to help Trump. And it's ridiculous. By the way, I'm tweeting out right now. Tapestry Media. This is Chris Sampson from Tapestry Media on Twitter, and of course Tapestry. The terror. I got to read the actual name of the tacticsofterror.org is the website if you want to check it out.
Right.
And I'm retweeting that right now. So because I, unlike the president, can do that.
A screenshot. Huh? Yeah, I just sent you a DM of one of my posts from June 28, 2019, where I basically pulled a little bit of Ali Akbar. His name is Ali Abdul Razak Akbar of Dallas, Texas. And what I wrote back then was, this con artist is the intent on disrupting the party he's opposing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, mind you, this is June 2019. I was already on to him 6 or 8 months before. He's a convicted felon who spent a lot of his time removing the traces of his crimes and his deeds, and as part of a cadre of liars engaged in dirty tricks. Where is the money coming from? Now, the reason why I put it is because he's constantly talking about the amount of money that needs to come to him to sustain his project. And you and others have been honing in on what he's about. he's in all these different locations doing something. And I don't know about you. I can't do that out of nowhere. I mean, like, if I'm going to go somewhere, someone's going to have to help me get there, right?
Right. Yeah, we got to pay our bills. And we don't have some sort – and by the way – well, go ahead. Continue real quick.
No, but that's the point, is that we have bills to pay. And yet some of these folks are everywhere and have no time to be earning income. Mm-hmm. So there's racket money behind them. And we know Roger Stone was pushing some of this. We have some people asking me all the time, where's Steve Bannon? Why are we not hearing from Steve Bannon? You know, his war room was taken off of YouTube a couple days ago as well. Mm-hmm. They've been promising this battle now for months.
Right.
And when this finally went down, they all run, and they all want to say, "Oh no, I'm for, you know, for peace. I'm not for violence."
I was saying battle. I was saying, when I said fight and battle and take up arms and stand up and stop them and traitor and treason and firing squad, I was speaking sort of metaphor. I was, you know, I was kind of, you know, when I said
cage match, I meant
when I say firing squad, I mean these people from the squad should be fired from their jobs in Congress. Business. Oh God.
And they have been I'm gonna say I don't really get freaked out by my work anymore. Mm-hmm. I've learned over time, I'm not saying I don't have days where it doesn't kind of get me, but I'm usually scratching my head most of the time, and it's because I see stuff all the time that I'm like, oh, you're playing to your audience, whoever you are. And you're out, you know, and you know, I observe extreme Nazis. I mean, like, extreme.
Yes.
The majority of this crowd is not really that, but they were there. Mm-hmm. They were in the middle of that group. There's one group we call the National Socialist Club, the NSC group. They were posting stickers, you know, or little screenshots of them being out there with their little – holding up their stickers in front of the Congress. You know, like, we're here too.
Yeah.
And the main guy that was arrested in Pelosi's office, he's a white nationalist. He made it, you know, he was all over his Facebook page saying, you know, black nation and Latin, you know, Latin nation, they can do it. And I didn't understand why he was using such weird language, but why not white nation, you know? And it's like, well, what box are we putting you in? You're a white nationalist.
Right.
Let me poke fun at one guy.
Okay, we have to take a break. Can we wait for the next break?
Of course.
That'd be awesome.
Course,
thanks. Course, Let's take a break real quick. This will be a short one, and we'll be back right after this. This is the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk. WCPT820.com is the website. Program it in case they attack the airwaves or something. I don't know. Whatever panic you're supposed to use. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide. It's now time for the happy ending. Yay!
Welcome back. By the way, we're still on with Chris Sampson for a couple more minutes. I keep holding him over on the break because I want to. There was one particular person you were talking about that you were like, you're going to make fun of this one particular fellow.
Yeah, there's a guy. He was so gung-ho to scream. He was having fun. There was two of them, actually. I'm going to highlight both of them. But the main guy that comes to mind is Tim Gwinnett, otherwise known as Baked Alaska. Now, he's a guy who loves...
He was inside the Capitol, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And he's filming. Now, let me flash back about 3 years when a friend of mine sends me a link. He goes, "Did you see this ambush of Malcolm Nance?" I go, "No." And, like, of course, it's Malcolm, so that's my buddy, and I'm looking at everything. And it's this guy, Baked Alaska, pulls him aside at Politicon and tries to do a little impromptu video ambush with him, where he goes, "What's wrong with being proud of being white?" Malcolm goes, "Wait, who are?" And Malcolm's a pro, you know, and he says, "Oh, hi, who are we? Okay, who are we talking to? Okay, you want to ask that question? Okay, sure. Well, let me tell you something. There's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, when you go a little too far with it, we put you in a box." And he literally drew a little box out with his fingers at the camera. And he goes, "Well, what about black nationalists?" "Oh, no, we look at them too. And when they go too far, we put them in a box."
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And he sort of laughed, and then the interview was over. Well, guess who's in that box now?
Yeah.
Baked Alaska.
Right.
And Malcolm warned him. He says, "You want to play extremist? You will be in the box. And you don't want to get in the box." And Malcolm, just 2 days ago, said, "What did I tell you about that box?" Mm-hmm. So that was the first person that I ID'd in this, when someone sent me a video and said, "Oh, there's this guy." I go, that's Baked Alaska. Yeah. Oh, who's that in the background with him? That's Nick Fuentes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so here's the funny thing. They sit online and they yuck it up. And now they're basically facing federal charges. So how funny is it? Now, And they streamed everything, which is the thing I wanted to get to. So many of these people handed over and made our jobs super easy.
And just live confessed to their crimes.
Yeah. So the guy last night we were having fun with was the zip tie guy. In fact, there's two zip tie guys.
Yeah.
And the primary one a lot of people see, his name is Eric, and Eric Munchell, and he's out of Nashville. And he was in a hotel like right after having fun with his mom, who he travels with, and his friends. And he had his mask off because they don't do masks. And like, congratulations, homie. Now you've like pretty much been outed for, you know, trying to run around and at least appearing to be planning to execute people or kidnap them or whatever you were planning.
Yeah.
Take Try hostages. Explaining.
At the minimum, trying to take government officials hostage. At the maximum, if he's part of that Gab crowd that was talking about executing the VP, that was the target. That's who they were hunting for. That whole Gab conversation and the WhatsApp stuff that Jared and all them have been, you know, involved in for a very long time and kind of using that, and the Matt Gaetzes of the world and Devin Nunes, they operate on things like WhatsApp as public servants, allegedly. It's one thing if these guys do it. It's another thing entirely if public servants are hiding their internal conversations, even from normal, you know, ethics investigations and the like. They are using destructive methods, which is against the law, to coordinate with other members of government to subvert functioning overt government with a form of covert government. That is effectively what's going on. And
if you remember, there's a guy out in Washington State. His name is going to escape me in this conversation. But there was a guy in Washington State. I think he's a state rep or state senator. He's off the grid crazy. Yeah. And, you know, they started trying to sanction him out there because he's just as bad as the worst of these guys. Mm-hmm. And yet he's in one of the offices. And as many people have been pointing out, we now have two or three QAnon folks that just got elected to Congress.
Right.
And what's their excuse going to be now? So. It'd be very interesting to see how the Congress handles through ethics investigations,
expelling
those members, right.
Which they're going to have to do. Because the problem is, like, you know, a lot of people know I'm a Mason and I'm a Freemason. Yeah. We get a lot of bad rap over the years, you know, obviously. But one of the things that we do as part of being a Freemason is promise not to try to subvert the government.
Right.
Everything we do, you know what I mean?
Hal, you're on the level, man. You've squared up your intentions.
Exactly.
And I like that about you.
You know where I stand. None of my political leanings are hidden behind, you know, an anime avatar and a fake name on Twitter. I'm as out there as you possibly could be. Meanwhile, though, I'm accused of those kind of things by people who actively are saying this is the language we have to use to hide what we're really doing. And the QAnon folks literally take an oath amongst themselves to fight this internal fictional deep state that they've made up, which could include anybody who disagrees with them. And now that has reached a violent level.
And they're called digital soldiers. They actually took an oath. I'm glad you said that. Yeah. Michael Flynn is a guy we haven't talked about in this conversation, but Michael Flynn got suspended the same time as Donald Trump. And Michael Flynn is a very bad person at this point. You know, I'll be honest with you, especially with Michael Cohen out there. I've tried to mentally keep an open mind that maybe there's some nuances about certain people's characters that I might not really like them, but maybe they're not so bad. Michael Flynn is a very evil, bad man at this point.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. You know, and he has been pushing these guys to go out and do this. And he's operating this from a distance. And he's quite skilled at knowing what he's doing. He has the mental, you know, acuity to be doing this with full-mindedness. His, you know, a legal expert in his mens rea will have fun. So these guys are definitely behind a lot of this. And there's one more thing with this is that the social media platforms, I've said this for years, they have a different responsibility to their bottom line than they signed up for this. They did not sign up to get in the middle of extremist battles and be, you know, censoring the political sphere. Their business model was not that.
Yeah.
But they took decisive action this week to say on multiple levels, we're not playing this game anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not fun anymore. Jack took way too long to suspend Donald Trump.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flat out.
Agreed. I mean, and now, and especially, you do this with sadness and sobriety when you kick him off in this circumstance. You don't get to pat yourself on the back because six people are now dead.
It's like the cabinet resignations.
Oh, my God. Those
just
people
just a couple days left.
They're just avoiding not having to sign on to the 25th so that if they want a future in politics, they can go, well, I resigned because I wasn't sure of that, but I didn't go against the president. Like, that's nonsense.
Well, it's like inviting the drunk to your party, right? Who brings his drunk friends, and you think, well, but see, I promised I would have 1,000 people at the party. Mm-hmm. And by having him, I now have 500 more. I only had 500 with this first crowd that weren't drinking, but I invited the drunk. And you know, and you make everyone put up with the drunk, so you get his 500 friends, so you meet your 1,000 quota, because that's what you promised.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he burns the house down, and you go, okay, well, okay, now can you leave?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I see it. Like they did it because they wanted all of those followers because they are you and I on Twitter are the commodity. We're not the end consumer. We're that's barely right. the end consumer.
Yeah.
The customer for them are the movie companies or the whatever it is they're selling and the ad revenue. And we're the target we're the product being sold to those companies. Right. So they don't want to reduce that extreme right wing audience because that is part of the ticking number they need to say we have, you know, X amount of millions of followers.
Right. But there was a you know, they were talking about that, how like the reason why they hadn't kicked him off is that their active use, you know, they dropped 1.3% and their stock dropped because of the number of people kicked off or leaving because Trump went with them or what have you. Right. Well, imagine having a store. And trying to get investors in your store by showing them that half of your customers are robots that just browse.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, look how packed my store is. You should invest in my store. When in reality, there's literally a robot just moving a blouse back and forth like a Herbie Hancock video.
Right.
And going, look at my customer base. Like, the social media, there are enough people in the world who are actual human beings that can be drawn into a social media environment to actually work. You don't have to allow for those inflated numbers. And
I know people who are – I know of accounts we're watching that are – we don't know why they have, you know, 100-something thousand followers.
Because they
except
don't.
Except we will find that they actually purchased a big bunch of those to draw in the next crowd. So their real audience is probably legitimately 15% to 20% of the actual people interacting with them. And you can tell that by one factor. If you look at the retweets and engagements with that many, it's really, really low.
Yes.
If you take someone like you or Malcolm Nance or someone who's on TV with a high audience and a high follower count, the interactions are fine because you could, like Malcolm put out a tweet this morning, and by the time I saw it an hour later, it had 6,000 likes. And, you know, that means it's authentic audience
That's
building.
Right.
He has about 15%, you know, fake audience, and that's expected.
Yeah, because people send them to, you know, bot and follow and retweet, and there's machines now set up for all that stuff. We're out of time.
John, you and Hal, I love you guys.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for being on with us. Chris Sampson, the book is Hacking ISIS. The Tactics of Terror is the website .org. Tactics of Terror.
Next time, let's talk about the foreign fueling of this because we didn't really get
there. Oh,
let's remember there was one guy that was arrested in D.C. that required a Russian interpreter.
Dun, dun, dun. Love you, Chris.
Next time.
We'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening to the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide. Stay tuned for Dick K on the local Chicago stations. And, of course, we'll see you in the post show, those of you that are still with us. Okay.